Welcome to the monthly Three Edge View from the Edge for May of 2026. I'm Fritz Foltz, the Chief Investment Strategist here at Three Edge, and joining me here today, as he does every month, is Eric Biegelhuizen, Director of Investment Research and our Deputy Chief Investment Officer here at Three Edge Asset Management. And as we do each month, Eric will provide our firm's most recent outlook for the global capital markets, which is based on our proprietary Three Edge research model. I have a lot to cover today. So let's get started. And to begin, Eric, maybe you could review our Three Edge asset class matrix and give us a big picture overview and let us know what has changed, if anything, since last month.
Yeah, thanks, Fritz. We can see here just a little bit of nuance change here. We're seeing developed Asia move up to a full plus one spot, up from just being, you know, more in that mixed to slightly positive range. And as a result of that, And the still somewhat positive outlook for U.S. equities, we see cash coming down as we've deployed some of that capital, but we still maintain some of that dry powder for opportunities that arise. You know, April was a strong month for global equities. Investors clearly looked past the war that's ongoing in the Middle East. The S&P 500, for example, was up just over 10% in April. The NASDAQ 100, an index of technology companies, up over 15% for the month. International equities did well, too. Japanese and German and Indian stocks were all up each over 5%. And emerging markets broadly, equities were up over 12%. Now, gold and bonds were slightly negative on the month, and commodities broadly made some gains as well, as we saw the price of energy elevate significantly since the outbreak of the war, though still quite volatile, right? Since we see this back and forth with daily headlines suggesting maybe the war is over, and then maybe, no, it's not, it's actually going to escalate. You know, there seems to be some assumption, though, that market participants believe a negotiated settlement will be reached in the near term, and that oil and other commodities passing through will once again flow out of that strait. But, you know, as we know, uncertainty and the threat of escalation remain.
Absolutely. All right. So let's get into the individual asset classes and start with U.S. equities, which, as you mentioned, had quite a rally in April. So what is our model indicating from this point forward in terms of the U.S. equity market?
Yeah, I mean, we're maintaining that marginally favorable outlook overall for U.S. equities. You know, you do have that threat of escalation in the conflict in the Middle East. That's still a possibility, even though it seems like most investors don't necessarily believe that's the case. You know, AI-focused firms have continued to deliver strong earnings and positive outlooks. You know, here's a chart that's just kind of interesting, a bit anecdotal, but we're seeing here that buyback announcements are put us on pace for the highest ever. Though, you know, case in point, it's rare that reality lives up to these announcements, but we'll see if it materializes. But nonetheless, that can help buoy the markets as well. Additionally, we've witnessed credit spreads in the U.S. Credit markets tighten a bit. So, you know, beyond these factors, we'll be closely watching the changing of the guard at the Federal Reserve as Kevin Warsh is set to take over that chairmanship from Chair Powell. You know, also interesting for the future direction of monetary policy is that Powell himself has indicated that he intends to remain at the Fed after his chairmanship is up in the month, which is not a usual event for an outgoing chair. So anyway, overall favorable, but not without its risks.
It's interesting about the Fed, though, because I believe that since Powell intends to stay, that Murin, that was sort of a temporary position, he would be out. Look at Japan, which you mentioned, being positive and even a tad more so now. I believe Japanese equities have actually outperformed the S&P year to date by a bit. So what is the outlook in terms of Japanese equities at this point?
Yeah, well, no doubt, and we talked about this a month ago, that Japan had acted by the closure of the strait. But just as U.S.-based investors have shrugged off this potential for a longer-term conflict, investors in Japanese equities have similarly looked past these risks. And there seems to be a resumption of the excitement surrounding the new prime minister's pro-growth plans for the country, which we were excited about as well prior to the conflict starting. You know, also notable, the government has appeared to draw a line in the sand regarding supporting their currency, the yen, as they've stepped in now several times to support the currency, not allowing it to get weaker than the 160 yen to the dollar rate. And so as we've discussed previously, and you know, a risk, of course, is an unwinding of the yen carry trade that would really impact most global markets So something that we are watching, but all taken together, that outlook has moved up a bit more positive here in the near term.
All right, great. So let's shift to Europe and European equities. I guess marginally positive performance year to date. What is the model seeing now in terms of Europe?
Yeah, the outlook for European equities remains negative with everything we're looking at with regard to the Middle East conflict, but more importantly, based upon the anemic growth numbers that we're seeing in the region. Unlike the U.S. Federal Reserve, the European Central Bank or the ECB, they just have that primary focus in price stability. And so with that global energy prices rising, this suggests that interest rate tightening may be the next move. That said, as we know, the numbers coming out growth-wise out of Europe have been not necessarily the greatest. And so if growth slows further, they may be, in fact, forced to actually perform loosening measures to stimulate the economy. And European equities do show the potential, for a breakout to the upside should some of that investor psychology measure improve, which maybe happens with some upward moves and some excitement about growth. But we're just not seeing any of that yet. So here in the near term, more negative than mixed even. Yeah.
All right. So last, let's hit emerging markets and Chinese equities. And is it true that I know China has struggled, but then the other emerging markets have done okay, right?
That's right. Yeah, China is positive, but not nearly as positive as the broader emerging market index, which is a bit unusual. Historically, typically we're seeing China actually paving the path for the broader emerging market equities. China's actually stayed largely on the sidelines during this conflict, which I think is a smart move on their part. And let's see how this play out. But seemingly maybe beginning to feel some of the pain of the Straits closure as they have now recently called for its reopening themselves. More important than all of that, perhaps, is this long-awaited Trump-Xi summit that had been postponed due to the conflict, and that is now scheduled to take place this month. So there'll be a lot to discuss and much to learn from that summit that is very likely to impact our outlook here. So more to come on that maybe by next month.
All right, excellent. So let's shift gears now away from the equity markets to the bond market and the U.S. Treasury market. What are we seeing there in terms of interest rates having gone through, having the war having started and now being in, I guess, the third month? What has been the impact on the Treasury market? What are we seeing from that?
Yeah, so last month we were talking about how inflation expectations, as measured by that one-year break-even inflation rate, rose in March to over 5%, having started the year around 2. So that's a pretty abrupt shift upward. But in April, this past month, it quickly reversed course and dropped dramatically to that 3% level. So I get less excited about the actual numbers, but more the rate of change, and kind of reflects the investor perception. And these sharp changes do suggest that market participants are no longer concerned about the effects of the spike in energy prices or this threat of rising inflation. So the Fed remains in this tough position with its dual mandate, unlike many other global central banks, of full employment and price stability. It's got that blunt tool of short-term interest rates, and it has to now be used in opposite ways to address both mandates in the current environment, right? We have lowering rates to boost employment versus raising rates to combat inflation. Interestingly, the incoming Fed chair, Kevin Warsh, has suggested potential changes to the key inflation metric of importance to track that may result in focusing on a measure of inflation called the trimmed mean measure. And it may have this impact of dampening month-to-month changes, potentially masking actual underlying price changes. And one can imagine why. You take a look here at this chart at headline CPI in white, compared to the PCE measure, which is their current preferred measure in blue. They're both elevated. Now compare that to the Dallas trimmed mean measure we see here. That's in blue. You can see that it's much lower than the other two, much more well-behaved, less volatile. So you can see why perhaps you want to look at that different inflation measure. Warsh has also suggested he supports a smaller balance sheet, which may have impacts on longer-term yields. Currently, futures markets are not pricing in any hikes or cuts, but this is likely to change once Warsh takes over and starts indicating the types of actions he intends to take with the Federal Reserve, something we'll be watching closely. So, taking all of that together, we still continue to favor shorter-term treasuries for the moment with regards to fixed income.
All right, excellent. So let's turn our attention to the real assets, gold and commodities, beginning with gold, which has come under some selling pressure. But I still believe it's ahead of the S&P year-to-date basis. So what is the model seeing now in terms of the outlook for gold?
Yeah, we've said this for some time. You know, we do continue to maintain a longer-term favorable outlook for gold. This is in large part based on the excessive levels of debt that we have as a country, and even more so perhaps the debt interest burden required to service all of that debt. Now you add in the cost of a war, that only makes it worse. You know, so this is a longer term thing that should benefit gold. Beyond this, countries, whether former friends or foes, you know, continue to diversify away from the US dollar and dollar based assets. And you take this all together, and this is just likely to result in longer term dollar weakness, and that's likely to benefit gold. Now, nearer term, we may be more in a consolidation period following gold's just meteoric rise earlier in the year. You know, clearer direction from the government on the war, clearer direction on interest rate policy from an incoming Fed chair. You know, all of this together may provide some clear signals to a potential nearer term impact on the price of gold.
All right. And then let's stay in the real asset category and look at commodities, broad commodities, where obviously the price increase in the price of oil and gas, as well as, you know, other commodities, anything that basically had to make its way through the Strait of Hormuz. It was fairly dramatic at the outset, but now what is our model indicating in terms of the outlook for commodities?
Yeah, very much like gold, you know, weakening demand for dollars may also benefit commodities more broadly as they too are priced in dollar terms. But broad-based commodity exposures that contain energy and agriculturally focused commodities, such as those you referred to going through the Strait, they may continue to benefit while that remains closed. So, you know, the outlook just continues to remain positive overall.
All right, great. So just to summarize, the attractiveness of Japan, slight increase there, and we've ratcheted down cash just a wee bit because we've deployed some of that cash, but we still have plenty of it for dry powder, and those are really the only changes that we saw here in the month of May. So with that, Eric, I want to thank you for summarizing our outlook and giving us some clarity on what we might expect in the months ahead. So that will do it for this month's edition of the 3EDGE View from the Edge. If you'd like a hard copy of the full View from the Edge newsletter for May, find that on our website at 3EDGEAM.com. As a reminder, our entire library of video content always available on our 3EDGE YouTube channel. And if you would be so kind as to subscribe to our YouTube channel, we'd be most appreciative. So, on behalf of Eric and everyone here at 3EDGE, thanks for listening. This commentary is intended for information purposes only and does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy securities. The opinions expressed in View from the Edge are those of Mr. Foltz and Mr. Beagleisen and are subject to change without notice in reaction to shifting market conditions. This commentary is not intended to provide personal investment advice and does not take into account the unique investment objectives and financial situation of the listener. Investors should only seek investment advice from their financial advisor. The observations include information from sources that 3EDGE believes to be reliable, but the accuracy of such information cannot be guaranteed. Investments, including common stocks, fixed income, commodities, and ETFs, all involve a risk of loss that investors should be prepared to bear.